fight for the heart and soul of America. Broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome to the program on this Tuesday, February the 20th, 2018. Yeah, there is an attack on our liberty, and it happens every time we've got a shooting. It's an attack on our right to self-defense. And we need to offer some positive solutions, and I think we need to seize the high ground in terms of terminology. We got a lot of people that are talking about solutions that would not be perfect. There is no solution that is perfect. We don't live in a perfect world. We don't have perfect people. All we can do is look at things that are going to make the situation better or make the situation worse. But there are some very important things that we could do that would make this better. And, of course, one of these things has been talked about for quite some time. It's been put in practice since 2008. We'll talk to some, we'll have some clips from people who are already practicing this, and that is having trained and armed teachers. But I think we need a terminology for this. And so I think we need to go back to the posse idea, the posse comitatus idea. And I understand there are some negative, pejorative implications to this, these connotations that have been put on that by the left. But we need to go back and we need to reclaim our history. We need to fight for that history. We need to fight for accuracy. And we need to explain what the Posse Comitatus Act was about. It's a very important thing, something that would not only be a way to seize the high ground, I think, in terms of this debate, but would also help us to understand really the rightful position of law enforcement and even the military in our society. And that's something we need to think about in terms of the NDAA that was passed back in 2012 by Obama when he said, don't worry, I'm not going to sign this. And then he signed it New Year's Eve when nobody was paying attention, giving the military the right to indefinitely detain people without trial. No, that's in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. And there was a good reason for that act to be there. And so I think what we ought to call it is the Posse Academy. Academia. Posse Academia. How about that? Maybe we could do that and start talking about the idea that we used to have a situation where we would have an elected sheriff who was accountable to the people, not a police chief who was hired and appointed by the government and being focused mainly on handing out fines to people. But you had a sheriff who was elected. You don't elect police chiefs. You elect sheriffs. And sheriffs have a very important, distinct role in Anglo-American history. It's a very powerful office, if we understand what it's about. And it should be an elected office. And the sheriff didn't have an army of people with him to enforce the laws. What he did was he relied on the force of the community, the posse comitatus, to go out and get the bad guys. And so we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about what's going on in terms of the debates, calling for the end of the Second Amendment, telling us that the founders could not have envisioned an 18-year-old buying a gun. You don't know anything about the militia then, do you? So that's an FBI agent, by the way, telling us that, trying to shift the blame away from the fact that they didn't do anything. That's a great attempt at misdirection. You know, mistakes were made, but, you know, let's think about the fact that the founders who wrote the Second Amendment never envisioned that an 18-year-old would have a gun. No, I'll tell you what the founders didn't envision. They didn't envision that we would be feeding mind-altering drugs to our kids. They didn't envision that we would turn our kids over to the government to be trained. Can you imagine anybody in 1776 coming up with the idea that we should have the government educate our children? They would have been run out of town on a rail, tarred and feathered, if they didn't hang them or shoot them. I mean, that's the most insane idea that we've got. So we'll talk to you about what's coming up. That we got a lot of news about the Olympics. We got a lot of news about what's happening with DACA, as well as some updates on civil asset forfeiture, Bitcoin, Washington's birthday. Why did we choose to honor Washington? A lot of people are upset by the fact that we're now calling it President's Day, that we ought to honor George Washington, and we should honor George Washington. Maybe the best thing we could do to honor his name would be to change the name of our capital. That's the thing that brings the most disgrace to George Washington's name. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome to the show on this Tuesday, February the 20th, 2018. We were going to have a guest, Andrew Yang. He's running for the presidential nomination of the Democrat Party. It's a very, 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 very long shot, as New York Times points out. But I've talked to presidential candidates who are focused on one issue before. We've had Zoltan Isfahan, who was running for the Transhumanist Party, labeled to draw attention to his idea that he loves the whole idea of transhumanism and cyborgs and so forth, so he wanted to draw attention to that. John McAfee was running for president to draw attention to cybersecurity. We talked to him about that. As a matter of fact, he came on Alex's show to announce his candidacy. So I was interested to talk to Mr. Yang because he has brought up something that is a very important problem. And that is, we're looking at, in just a few years, unemployment levels that will probably reach the level of the Great Depression. And not too many people are talking about this. The massive disruption that is going to be caused by applied artificial intelligence, not general artificial intelligence, not the kind of self-aware Skynet that is going to be billions of times smarter than humans, as the scientists are telling us. I'm not sure that that's going to happen. But I can tell you that the applied artificial intelligence, the types of things that are, we're going to have idiot savant machines. They'll be not general, but they will be very, very smart about certain things. About driving your car, for example. Yeah, that is possible. That is inevitable. The question is, how quickly will that come? Look at just the artificial intelligence, the applied artificial intelligence behind self-driving cars, and as it takes away transportation jobs, that just by itself will be a massive disruption to our economy, to unemployment. What are we going to do with all these people who don't have a job? And it's not just going to be one industry. It's going to be across multiple industries at the same time happening. And it's going to be not just horizontal across a lot of different industries. It's going to be vertical. It's going to affect people at the bottom, at the lowest level skills, obviously, but it's also going to affect people who are at middle level and upper level jobs. So this is a massive problem that's on the way. And I thought it was a very good idea that we got somebody running to actually address a problem that is coming at us full steam ahead. You know, you can see those lights at the end of the tunnel. That's the self-driving car coming at us. And that's emblematic of this larger problem. And I think it's a great idea that you got somebody in the Democrat Party who's focused on something other than identity politics and that insanity, just trying to divide people. Now, I don't agree with his solution, and we would have had a very good conversation. I would have been the yin to Andrew Yang, the dark to his light or whatever, vice versa. I think it would have been interesting to have that discussion. Hopefully, we can reschedule that interview. Hopefully, he's not too concerned to come on a program that is not going to be in 100% agreement with him. We'll have a civil discussion if he wants to come on. So that invitation still stands to Andrew Yang. But we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to talk about gun control. We're going to talk about Russiagate. We're going to talk about pedophile update news. There's a massive scandal throughout Europe, Oxfam. And this involves Haiti. It involves pedophiles and sexual abuse of people there. And it is blown up very big in the UK. And I haven't talked about it up to this point, but it's time we talk about that. So we'll get to that as well today. But let's start with the news here. There's an interesting article, and it was up on the Drudge Report. Olympic hockey players told not to shake hands. So they just do fist bumps or something. Right? Now, I mean, you're in a hockey game. You're going to be huffing and puffing and saliva when you hit the guy in the face or whatever. I mean, it's a contact sport. So I don't really know how that's going to keep sickness from being transmitted. I mean, you're out there playing hockey with people. You're going to be doing more than a fist bump as the game starts. But the reason that they're doing this, officials have told players to fist bump one another rather than shaking hands to prevent transmission of the norovirus, which is highly contagious. U.S. defenseman James Wisniewski's father tested positive for norovirus last week, and he's one of 49 of 283 confirmed Olympic cases that are still in quarantine. Do you realize this? They've got a virus outbreak at the Olympic Games, and they have still 49 people in quarantine there. And one of them is the father of one of these players. And so when I looked at that, I thought, you know, that would be an interesting way for somebody to commit a major act of terrorism, to start a worldwide pandemic, or to create a false flag pandemic. Just saying. Think about that. Just saying. 49 people there at the U.S. Olympics that are in quarantine over a disease. Wouldn't it be something? Because, you know, you get people sick there. You start a pandemic, again, terrorist act or a government that wants a false flag distraction. And those people are going to disseminate that throughout the world. They're going to get on planes, very long plane flights where everybody's closed up in an airplane, plenty of time to pass that virus on to people. Yeah, fist bumps. Okay, fist bumps. Meanwhile, let's take a look at what's going on with immigration. Breitbart has a story here. MS-13 pimp ordered baseball bat beating of an underage prostitute, quote unquote. This is a 15-year-old girl that they had under their control. This is Dreamers. These are three Dreamers. Look at these guys. Look at that guy in the middle. What an arrogant attitude. I mean, that guy is bad news. And, you know, when we look at MS-13, as I pointed out before, no matter what demographic you take, okay, this is not, look at these pictures here of people watching this thing. That's absolutely amazing. defiant. He's got his head tilted back, looking down his nose at the camera like, yeah, you talking to me? You talking to me? Except he's not saying that. I don't know if he speaks English, but, you know, when we talk about Dreamers, is this unfair? Well, these guys, they're the leader of the group is 24 years old. These two lieutenants who were arrested as well are 21 years old and 20 years old. Now, you know, Dreamers, anybody who comes here under 18. So, you know, that's is it a stretch to call them Dreamers? Is it a slur to Dreamers to say that these guys are Dreamers? Well, let's understand that the image that you're being sold in the mainstream media about Dreamers and their, you know, college graduates who are going to Harvard and so forth, for free, by the way, or heavily subsidized. But we've got, I think it's $800 million that the California university system has set aside for free tuition for foreign citizens, Dreamers, illegal immigrants. Nothing for the Americans. No. You're not going to get that money. We're going to give it to the foreign students coming in because we know that they're more easily brainwashed than you are. they're going to be the next wave, the fifth column that they have here. But when we look at this, 75% of them really don't finish college. And the crime rate for the Dreamers is twice that of other groups of Americans. And that's normalizing that for the fact that young people commit more crimes, regardless of what demographic group they belong to. And so when you normalize it for that, they commit crimes at twice the rate of other people. And only 25% of them speak English. Now, this is in Maryland. They charged the MS-13 leader for ordering the beating of a 15-year-old girl with baseball bat. And these guys all entered illegally from El Salvador. But that's not a problem. We cannot deport them because they're Dreamers. They're Dreamers. And we decided we didn't have a Dreamer program. I am so sick and tired of seeing the mainstream media report this as a Dreamer program. There is no program. This was a memo from Janet Napolitano, who is head of the Department of Homeland Security, saying we're not going to enforce immigration law and we're not going to enforce the borders. That was her responsibility. And so, again, you know, when we talk about this, it's just absolute insanity piled on top of insanity to say that we're going to adjudicate this through the courts. But according to the law enforcement source, this guy and his two fellow members dragged the teenage girl in the backyard in Maryland, and then four other men took turns beating her with a baseball bat. She received a total of 28 blows on various parts of her body. She suffered an indented buttocks. I mean, it was still indented when they got her. Discolored arms and legs, visible bleeding from her neck down. Ordered her beating because she wasn't doing a good job as an MS-13 prostitute. Now, you got Democrat politicians do a much better job as MS-13 prostitutes. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're just talking about this situation with MS-13. Four guys beating a 15-year-old girl because she wasn't a good enough prostitute. And let me tell you, you know, when we see this happening, all the way now into the Northeast, Maryland, massive concentration of MS-13, New York, Long Island, massive concentration of MS-13. That all began with illegal immigrants who were given sanctuary in California. That's where they got mass. They created this critical mass, and then they started spreading out to other areas of the country. The county that my wife grew up in now has over 400 MS-13 members. Now, they've got it written all over their face. But, you know, just because they've got a tattoo and because they're here illegally, you can't do anything about it. It's not a crime to be here illegally, right? It doesn't mean anything anymore. Our borders don't mean anything anymore. Our laws don't mean anything anymore. So they can't do anything about it. They have to wait until something like this happens. And then hopefully they will notice when that happens. And who are the people that are bearing the brunt of this? Are the Democrats really helping Hispanics? You know, some people came here to escape MS-13 and groups like that. Yeah, there's the picture of them right there. You know, they got it written all over their face, quite literally, MS-13. They're not secret agents, okay? This is not a big challenge for law enforcement or the FBI to identify these people. It is a challenge for them to have the moral integrity and backbone to enforce our laws and our borders, however. And as I was saying, the Hispanics are the ones who are being beheaded, who are being hacked to death, who are being beaten, who are being put into prostitution. And they come here trying to escape this kind of violence in their country. But if we have open borders, those people just come right in and follow them. And then they become the brunt of their oppression. For now, it will expand. It's already expanded way, way out of the original small community in California. And it's now a national problem. And it's going to be a problem that's not going to just affect Hispanic people. It's going to affect everybody. It is a very, very vicious gang, especially because it's so much oriented towards being very young. But, you know, we just have to allow these people who are dreamers. We give them a pass because they're young. And if they come in under the age of 18, that's just fine. We're encouraging MS-13 with our policies. And we're encouraging this when we say, well, we want to do something for these DACA recipients, these dreamers. There was never a DREAM Act. There was never a DACA law. It was simply the Obama administration saying they're not going to enforce the law. Why are we arguing this in the courts? So Hill says, what's next for DACA recipients as the deadline approaches? They had a lot of different approaches, different programs that were offered last week. Holding America hostage, holding our border security hostage, holding the wall hostage, because we have to do something for foreign citizens criminally trespassing here first. Is this America first? No. If you want America first, you put the border first, because you don't have an America without a border, number one. And you don't subordinate the interests of the American people, and you don't subordinate what they voted for in the last election so you can do something for the dreamers first. And again, the Democrats don't want to solve the problem. They want this to be an impasse. Both sides do, quite frankly. But we're sending a message to citizens of other countries to come here and live. And in the words of Hillary Clinton, as she said, just out in 2014, she said, we got to not send the message that if you get across the border, you can stay. Well, that's the message that's being sent now by both parties, because we've all got to do something for the DACA recipients. No, you don't. Buy them a ticket home. We've already educated some of these kids. So tell them, you know, you're welcome. Now you got to go home. But we've got two court injunctions in California and New York, and we've got, as they point out in the Hill, they call them recipients of the program, recipients of welfare, because they say that these court injunctions will grant them immunity from deportation, give them a work permit, allow them to get benefits. They are beneficiaries. Okay, so when we call the DACA people beneficiaries, understand, they are not college graduates. As I said, 75% of them don't graduate college. The crime rate is twice what it is for the rest of the population at their age. And they are beneficiaries. They are living off of the American taxpayer, while those who take jobs are competing with us, competing with our children for jobs. But we're now going to adjudicate this through the courts, and they're now appealing to the Supreme Court. What law are they appealing? I don't understand. What law did the judges shut down? They didn't. This latest judge said, well, okay, he's got the legal authority to do it, but I don't like his attitude about it. You can look at his tweets. They're awful. Is that what we have a legal system for here? The laws and the borders that are not being enforced were laws and borders that were in place before Barack Obama. If there was going to be a court case, there should have been a court case as to why Obama and Janet Napolitano would not enforce the law, would not enforce the borders. That's where you go to court. You don't go to court for permission to enforce laws. There's no law. There's no DREAM Act to adjudicate. There's no DACA Act that Trump is trying to repeal. That's the important thing. That's what the mainstream media is telling people. It's absolutely not true. All right, let's move on to civil asset forfeiture. The Alabama Senate is now considering curtailing civil asset forfeiture, reports the New American. And if you're scratching your head, like Megyn Kelly did when she was here, civil asset forfeiture, what's that? It's a conversation that I had with her, the brief interview that I had with her, and brought that up. What's that? Civil asset forfeiture. Well, let me tell you what civil asset forfeiture is, because you're not going to get this from the mainstream media. And most people don't really understand what's going on, even though this has been going on for decades. It's part of our fictional Alice in Wonderland, Kafka-esque war on drugs. Civil asset forfeiture. The Alabama state legislature is considering curtailing the power of the state's law enforcement officers from seizing property of individuals who have not been convicted of a crime. Let me repeat that. They seize the property of individuals who have not been convicted of a crime or even charged with a crime. Lysander Spooner gave an analogy for government. And he said, government is like a highway robber, except that it's worse. A highway robber will steal your money as you're going down the road and then leave you alone. Government will steal your money as you're going down the road and then follow you down the road nagging you about how you live your life. Well, if only he could see civil asset forfeiture, he would be amazed. Some sheriffs and other police agencies do not support this proposal, however, reports the New American. Two law enforcement officials are so adamant that lawmakers not revoke this power that they have penned an op-ed piece in opposition to this bill. And in that article, they're remarkably frank about how fruitful civil asset forfeiture policy has been for the cops there. A report published earlier this year revealed that in 2015, Alabama law enforcement seized nearly $2.2 million in just 1 year. Okay, so the data was gathered from only 14 of the state's 67 counties. So it's at least four times greater than that, probably. So we're looking at something that's about $10 million just in Alabama alone. Now, we don't have enough time to finish this in this segment, but when we come back, I'm going to tell you what the president of the Alabama Sheriff's Association, who is pleading for his ability to rob you without even charging you with a crime. That's what we're talking about here, folks. You want to... How about the Constitution? Let's give that a try. We'll be right back.
From the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Let's continue talking about civil asset forfeiture, because this is a very, very important problem. If the government can take your money without any cause, we have really entered a very dangerous area here. And I'm surprised that Republicans, of all people, aren't concerned about this, because Republicans typically understand property rights and value them more than Democrats do. And that's what we're talking about here. Taking your stuff without you having committed a crime, without them even charging you with a crime, let alone finding you guilty of a crime. Just stealing your property. And this is happening to people of all demographic groups, of every social strata. It's not just poor people that are getting ripped off, although, just like most of the drug war, it is focused on poor people, on black people. But it's not just limited to them. As a matter of fact, one of the first cases that I saw of this was a black man. He was his business was that he would fly to another area. He would get a bunch of stuff in a truckload and then drive it back on a one-way trip. And he bought a ticket with cash. He was flagged for that. And he had like $9,000 cash on him to buy the stuff that he was going to be picking up and driving back. He was a legit businessman. It's a strange business model that he had, but nevertheless, it was legit. And they confiscated his cash. And they said, you know, we think that you might be using this in some kind of a drug business. And he wasn't. But we've also had situations where you've got people that would be considered to be independent businessmen that are fairly wealthy. Here's an example of that. A guy who had a private jet charter business. And he picked up two guys in suits one day, with briefcases. And he flew them across the border from the northern U.S. into Canada, waited for their meeting, and then flew them back. That's all he did. And when he landed, the plane was surrounded by DEA agents who said, well, these two individuals we've been following for some time, and we know that they were discussing a drug deal. And we know that you didn't do anything about it. And we know that you had nothing to do with this. You were just acting as a taxi service. But we're going to confiscate your plane. And so they charged, in the case of the black man, when they took his cash, it was U.S. government versus $9,000 of cash. In the case of this other one, it was U.S. government versus Learjet, serial number, blah, blah, blah. And the guy had to sue them in court. It took him over 2 years to get his plane back. He was bankrupted by then because he was out of business and he had to sue to get his property back. I'm sure the black man didn't have enough money to sue to get his property back, but that's what we're talking about here, civil asset forfeiture. Let me unpack that for you. Civil. That doesn't mean that they're nice about it. They usually have force and guns and threats involved in all of this too. Now, civil means that in their imaginary world, you haven't violated a law. You have violated a rule. This is not a law that was passed by Congress. This is a rule that was passed by unelected bureaucrats. And so since it's a rule passed by bureaucrats, it is a civil violation, not a criminal violation. Therefore, you get none of the protections that are enumerated in the Constitution, the Fourth, the Fifth, the Sixth Amendment. None of those apply. None of those. That is the legal fiction under which people operate. And you'll have people call up and tell me, you know, we don't have the Constitution anymore. We have we're under admiralty law. And I'd say, you know what? You're never going to explain that to people if they can't understand civil asset forfeiture. If they can't understand the fictional, imaginary scenario that the federal government is operating under by saying, you haven't committed any crime. And we're not charging you with any crime. We're charging your property with assisting in a crime. So the property is being charged here. And it's not a law. It's a rule. So you don't get any constitutional protections. You don't get any presumption of innocence. You don't get a trial. We can give you excessive fines if we wish. And we just make it up. We just take whatever we want. We take your plane. We take your boat. We take your house. We take your car. We take your cash. Whatever. Whatever we feel like. And then they take the money. And they divide it up. They divide up the spoils. They divide up the stolen property because that's what it is. You know, the forfeiture part, the asset forfeiture, that's a nice name for theft. And so what we have here is a theft by law enforcement who say that they're not enforcing any laws. They're enforcing rules. Therefore, this is civil, not criminal, and you don't have any constitutional protections and nothing to say about it. So sue us in court if you don't like it. We've got the uniforms. We've got the guns. See you in court. I'm taking your property right now. You like living in a country like that? I don't. That's why I oppose prohibition. I don't support drug use. I've said this over and over again. I don't support alcohol use. But because I've seen what it has done to people that I've known. I don't support opioid use just because it's approved by the FDA and pushed by doctors and hospitals. I don't support opioid use, but it's legal. It's legal. And if these people who talk about the opioid epidemic, if they really believed in their drug prohibition laws, they would at least prohibit opioids. It wouldn't make any difference, but at least they could walk the walk of their talk. But let's go back to this civil asset forfeiture situation in Alabama, because there's other states that need to do this as well. And so what's remarkable about this article that was written by the president of the Alabama District Attorneys Association and the president of the Alabama Sheriff's Association is an open admission that they deny due process and that they really like the money. We're thieves. We're not embarrassed about it. We're not ashamed of it. See, this is where we are in America now. We got the NSA, the CIA, the FBI. They're spying on you in violation of the Constitution, even in violation of the FISA Act. They use the FISA Act as an excuse, as a matter of fact. And now they're doing it openly, and they're bragging about it. What used to be done in secret because they knew that it was illegal. And they were not necessarily so much ashamed of what they were doing. They just didn't want to get caught. And so they would do it in the shadows. That's why we talk about the shadow government. But now they do it in the open. We used to have Operation Mockingbird, where they would talk to, they would tell ABC, CBS, NBC, Walter Cronkite, you know, we want you guys, don't do anything that's any critical of our government. As a matter of fact, we don't want you to even talk about this story over here. This story, we would like for you to portray this in a very positive light. That was Operation Mockingbird. They would give them the talking points and tell them what to say. Now these guys are hired as talking head commentators on mainstream media, CNN and so forth. They come on and, you know, all these guys, Clapper, Brennan, these other individuals, now they're the ones talking directly to you. They've eliminated the middleman. But let's go back to civil asset forfeiture. So they have a Forfeiture Accountability and Integrity Reform Act that would make criminal prosecution the only procedure whereby property may be seized in Alabama. And see, most people think that that's really the system that we live under until they get their property stolen by the cops. By the cops. This is the amazing thing about this. And this is why this is not controversial, because most people are ignorant about it, just like Megyn Kelly, who had never heard of civil asset forfeiture, didn't know. And even after I explained it to her, she didn't care. She didn't care. That was the most amazing thing. So the fact that your property can be complicit in the commission of a crime, that is the Alice in Wonderland aspect of it. And then the fact that you have to go through a civil trial to sue the government to get it back, that's the Kafka aspect of it, for all of you who know Kafka. So, yeah, that's the important thing to understand. And that when you don't have, we live in a situation. The other part of this is when we talk about this distinction between civil and criminal, understand that we have a system here where we have taxation without representation, but even more importantly, almost all of our regulation is done without representation. You know, those 80,000 pages plus a year that they add to the Federal Registry? Those are being put in there by unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats. And they are civil law. And you don't have a representative when it comes to that. Or as Lindsey Graham would say, shut up. You don't get a lawyer. Yeah, that's the American system today. Aren't you proud? Do you want to change it? You can do something about it. The first thing is to understand the game that they're playing, how they're lying to you. We'll be right back. We'll talk about Washington's birthday. And we'll also talk about what's going on in the stock exchange. The most iconic stockbroker of all admits, I never owned a share in my life. Talk about Washington, because, you know, yesterday was really the official George Washington birthday. They've changed it to President's Day. We're going to talk about that in a moment. What can we learn from George Washington, and what can we learn from the closure of the U.S. markets on President's Day or George Washington Day? Something very interesting that we noticed. Actually, it's a report here from Zero Hedge. They noticed it, and I'm going to tell you what they noticed happened on the stock market on George Washington's birthday. So stay with us. I'm going to get to that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I'll remind you of the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. We have several products that we have put on discount, very deep discount. We've got Cellforce, the Real Red Pill, both of those 50% off. Also, our newest product, Icarin, is now available at 50% off for a limited time at InfoWarsStore.com. That's a great way to detoxify your body, to support your liver and your kidneys, and to do it with natural, safe ingredients. Things like milk thistle extract. Icarin is available at 50% discount right now. We also have Pollen Block, also a very new product at 50% off, and an InfoWars Life Daily Digestive Pack. Carnivore and Floor Life. Carnivore to help support your digestion. Floor Life to help support your gut health with probiotics. Those two are together at 50% off. It's a great time to stock up on some of these products. Don't miss these sales at InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you for supporting us. All right, let's go back to the news here. As New American points out, you know, George Washington is somebody that really is worthy of our respect. He's somebody who has been called the Cincinnatus. He was a guy who, after he had served two terms, he said, that's enough. We don't want a permanent emperor. Everybody was very afraid of that. Everybody was, he had such a impressive personal demeanor that a lot of people were concerned that having won the war as a general, a lot of people were concerned that they were going to get a Caesar, somebody like that. Have we crossed the Rubicon? No, they didn't. John Adams nominated George Washington to be the Continental Army's commander in chief, and he was concerned that they not have somebody of the character that they would seize power and then become a Caesar and remain in power. And so his question when he was talking to people, the question that these guys had, because they understood human nature. That was one of the things about the founders of this country. They're very wise about human nature. They had a Christian perspective of human nature, of a flawed human nature. So they said, does this man have the moral character to be able to give up power? And he did. He did. They judged correctly. You know, I thought it was interesting when we had the contract with America. Remember that? It was 1994. Bill Clinton had gotten in 1992. They needed to have a Republican majority. They did get a Republican majority. Newt Gingrich put together a contract with America. He had a 10-point plan. And they implemented every one of those 10 points except for term limits. Isn't that interesting? We don't have people of the character of George Washington in Washington anymore. You know, when I ran in 1996, more as anything, as a paper candidate, the Libertarian Party, I didn't like the fact that they had a 10-point plan, a contract with America. And my slogan was, my contract with America is the Constitution. The Bill of Rights is my contract with America. Those 10 items there, because that's the important part about the Constitution. The rest of it is really kind of a blueprint for taking power. All these people who talk about the general welfare, the supremacy clause, the commerce clause, it's like, you know what? Those have been the tools that they have used to deceive people to concentrate power in Washington. And that was the last thing that the founders wanted. They had that discussion over and over again. They said, if we create this government, it's going to concentrate power in Washington. And if you just take the Constitution as it originally was, that's exactly what it would have done. They had to ignore and deny the Bill of Rights in order for them to concentrate power in America. When they looked at it, they said, you know, we got things in here like the General Welfare Clause or the Commerce Clause or whatever. That could be used to as wiggling room. So they put in the 10 Amendments. And the 9th and 10th Amendment shut down that kind of expansive use of power, that kind of concentration of power in Washington. But we don't pay any attention to the 9th and 10th Amendment anymore. And so we wind up with exactly what they didn't want, or maybe what they did want, the guys who pulled the wool over everybody else's head. We wound up with a constitution that concentrated power rather than one that kept it divided. But let's take a look at what the markets were telling us yesterday as they were closed. Zero Hedge said U.S. equity futures traded higher overnight and into the European Open and then started fading. Somebody forgot to tell the machines that the U.S. markets were closed. So the robo-traders, the automatic programming traders, are looking at this stuff. They said at 9:30 Eastern time, it appears that the machines went about their usual stop-hunting business as those dumb humans forgot to tell them the markets are closed. If you pull up that story, you can see that the chart just plummets down as the machines took over, not knowing that the market was closed. And as I point out, the volume was not tiny either. It's very large volume because the machines have a great deal of effect on our stock market. And then we have this article, also from Zero Hedge, talking about the New York Stock Exchange most iconic stockbroker admits that he has never owned a share of stock in his life. How about that? That's a great recommendation for investing in stocks, isn't it? The guy's name is Peter Tuchman. And as I point out, he's 60 years old. He's become iconic. He looks kind of like Einstein, they said. He's a real indicator, a real-time indicator of sentiment on Wall Street, whether it's anguish, anticipation, desperation, or triumph. So, and he said, the floor of the New York Stock Exchange is the greatest office on earth, says Tuchman. Says it has energy, people. These are hallowed floors, 120 years old, and every president, every head of state, celebrities have walked onto this floor, and once my face became what it has become, I love that part of it, too. I'm kind of the face of this thing. So what does the face of the New York Stock Exchange say? They have this interview with the Washington Post. And as I point out in Zero Hedge, it's raised a few eyebrows among the cognoscenti. The question is that they asked this guy, do you own stock? And he said, I have never owned a share of stock in my life. I do not eat my own cooking. Funny thing about money, if I started to worry about my own profit and loss, I would be less concentrated on my customers' well-being. And I also have two children in college, so I don't have any money to buy stocks. He wouldn't have the money to put his kids in college if he'd invested heavily in stocks either, most likely. The Washington Post goes on and says, but you must have some investments. He said, I invest in my family and in my kids. My kids will graduate college without any debt. That is my investment. Ah, the most sage advice that this New York Stock Exchange iconic character ever gave anybody, isn't it? All right, Deutsche Bank says, if trust in monetary and political stability were lost, people would turn to cryptocurrencies, you think? As a matter of fact, John McAfee, when he was interviewed here on this program, said that his outrageous bet of a sky-high valuation for Bitcoin, he thinks it's going to go to $1 million. And I think, what was that, 2 years or something that he came time frame? I don't remember exactly. But he said he was basing that not so much on the increase in value of Bitcoin, but the collapse of the fiat currencies. Because you understand that, you know, there is actually more intrinsic value in the cryptocurrencies because it does take computing time and effort to generate one of those, unlike our paper money that the central banks, the Federal Reserve, can just paper over the debt, just run the printing presses. That doesn't take nearly as much as it does to create a Bitcoin or some of these other currencies. But nevertheless, all of these things are evaluated in terms of the other. You know, when we look at the metric system, people say, I just can't, that metric system is so complicated. It's not complicated. It's all a factor of 10, you know, fractions of 10, multiples of 10. It's the English system that's complicated. You got 12 inches and a foot, 3 feet and a yard. You got to remember all these different conversion factors. And the metric system is all just decimal. It gets complicated when you convert from one to the other. It's like, oh, that's right. There's 2.5 centimeters and an inch. Gee, the metric system is complicated. No, it's not. But anyway, it's the complication that we're looking at here is going back and forth valuing cryptocurrencies in terms of fiat currencies. And as Deutsche Bank says, they said, if we lived, I'm sorry, this is the New York Fed's economist last week said, if we lived in a dystopian world without trust, Bitcoin might dominate existing payment methods. See, a dystopian world for them would be if you didn't turn over your blind trust to the central bankers and the people who are manipulating the economy. That would be a dystopian world for the bankers, for the central bankers, for the Federal Reserve. They said, but in this world where people do tend to trust financial institutions to handle payments and central banks to maintain the value of money, how has that worked out for us over the last 100 years? You know, the American dollar, since the creation of the Federal Reserve, has lost over 99% of its value. This is a private organization that can create bubbles and burst them. They know when they're going to do it. They can trade off of that. They can make money off of that. And you lose the store of your work, of your value, of your wealth because of that. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Trust the government. Trust the Federal Reserve. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. You can trust us. That's what Deutsche Bank is saying. That's what the Federal Reserve, the New York Fed's economists were saying last week. At what point does trust die? Good question. The rise of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, the decline in cash payments, Provide the background for a new concept, writes Zero Hedge, digital cash issued by central banks. Look, we're headed for a cashless society. The question is, who's going to control that cash? And will it be anonymous? There's a lot of reasons to want to have anonymity in your money. And there's also a lot of reasons to make sure that somebody can't manipulate it at will. Now, it's very hard to stop the manipulation either with cryptocurrencies or with the Federal Reserve. But at least with the cryptocurrencies, you have the transparency of algorithms that are out there to be examined. There's a lot more transparency. There's a lot of opportunity to rig these things, obviously, but there's a lot more transparency than there is with the Federal Reserve. And that's a game that's been out there. And of course, it's also important to have anonymity, not just because there's people out there who want, not for the purpose of tax evasion, but so that you don't get your cash confiscated by the government. We've already, this isn't a theory. This isn't a conspiracy idea. We've already seen this happen. We've seen in Europe, they came in and they deposed democratically elected governments and then those, and then put in Goldman Sachs bankers in charge in Greece and Italy and so forth. And then these bankers said, we're going to confiscate your money. They called it a haircut. A haircut. That just is absolutely amazing. It should amaze you as well. It's one of the things, one of the finest moments of Nigel Farage when he went to the European Parliament and he said, you've got the demeanor of a third-rate bank clerk. And he said, who put you in charge? You went to the historical seat of democracy and you shut that down and you put yourselves in power. I mean, that's what we're talking about. So to have privacy and mobility of cash, certainly anything can be manipulated. Gold can be manipulated. You have people with so much money, they can manipulate anything. So that is really kind of off the table. Any of these things can be manipulated. But the question is there going to be some transparency about how it is evaluated? Is there going to be some honesty in it? I mean, these cryptocurrencies, for the most part, are deflationary rather than inflationary. They have an upper limit in terms of the number of coins that are going to be in circulation. And so there is some transparency, some honesty in that. But then the question is, how do they maintain this trust? And what is going to happen with this? Because as they're saying, now you've got governments and central banks, as they continually try to push FUD on you, fear, uncertainty, and doubt about cryptocurrencies, they're working very, very hard to try to regulate them out of existence. If they were as bad as they say, then people wouldn't have anything to do with them. So there is a massive PR campaign being conducted by the media, by the governments, by the central banks, by regular banks, saying, we're not going to allow you to purchase cryptocurrencies with any of the credit cards that we have or whatever. You know, but they wouldn't be doing that. They're not altruistic, folks. They don't prevent you from buying penny stocks or even stocks on the New York Stock Exchange with your credit card or thing, right? They don't pay any attention to that. That is a casino. They don't, as a matter of fact, you want to talk about casinos, they don't limit you from using your credit card in Vegas if you think that you're going to become a video poker billionaire like Stephen Paddock, we're told, okay? You can still use your card on that. No, they're very concerned about cryptocurrencies. And that should tell you something. They're concerned because they know you don't trust them. And you shouldn't trust them. So they say, in times of financial or political uncertainty, people may think beyond convenience and yield, and they might start looking for things like privacy and transportability. Can I get my cash out of this country without these people stealing it in the government? We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I've got one more thing to say about cryptocurrencies. It's kind of interesting. We had the South Korean cryptocurrency regulator has just been found dead in his home. This is the South Korean official who guided Seoul's regulatory clampdown of cryptocurrencies. He was found dead on Sunday. He helped to coordinate efforts to create new legislation aimed at suppressing cryptocurrency speculation and illicit activity. Well, it's not speculation and illicit activity, because if they were concerned about that, they'd shut down the New York Stock Exchange. They'd shut down the Chicago Board, Commodities Board. No, they do that kind of stuff all the time. As I was saying at the top of the hour, all this posturing by Lloyd's of London and Bank of America and all these American banks saying you can't use your credit card to buy cryptocurrencies. Well, they don't stop people from using their credit cards on video poker machines and in Las Vegas. They don't stop you from buying stocks on the New York Stock Exchange, any of this stuff. No. The reality is that there is going to be a demand, because people don't trust this system, and they don't trust governments who, as I was pointing out, from civil asset forfeiture to haircuts, saying, we have a deficit here, so we're going to put a banker in charge, and then he's just going to confiscate what he needs out of all your accounts here. And don't worry, we'll only do it to people above a certain level. And that level got pretty low in Greece and other places. So if you don't want that to happen, if you want to be able to get your money out of Dodge, it's kind of like, think of cryptocurrency as a bug-out bag for your cash. Okay, that's really what we're talking about here. I don't think this guy was killed by anybody. He had a heart attack. But if anybody killed him, I would suspect the central bankers more than I would suspect even anybody on the dark web. If you don't believe that, go back and look at the history of Andrew Jackson. He knew who was coming after him when they tried to assassinate him. All right, let's move on to other aspects of the economy. We have a Republican congressman, Todd Rokita, has introduced the Crumbs Act. And let me just say, this is going to be the campaign slogan for this year's election. It's the crumbs, stupid. Remember, Bill Clinton got elected, and the people around him focused on the economy. And they said, forget all these other side issues. The thing that's going to get you elected, that's going to keep you in office, is the economy. It's the economy, stupid. It's the economy, stupid. Keep it focused on the economy. Don't get distracted on these other side issues. And so I think that this soundbite that we got from Nancy Pelosi saying, this is nothing but crumbs. Nothing but crumbs. The arrogance of Nancy Pelosi to people. That's something that's going to be hammered down. And I think that they ought to just say, it's the crumbs, stupid. This election is about the crumbs, stupid. These are people who have called us deplorable. That was one of the biggest sound bites out of the election. And now it's going to be crumbs. And so Representative Todd Rokita, Republican of Indiana, is telling Nancy Pelosi, we're going to take our crumbs. He's proposing and he came up with an acronym. At one level, I kind of hate it when they do this. The Patriot Act, that was an acronym. And it was totally not patriotic. But they always do this. And they've got an acronym for crumbs, the Crumbs Act. Creating relief and useful middle class benefits and savings. The Crumbs Act. The measure would make bonuses received by workers in 2018 tax-free up to $2,500. There you go, Nancy Pelosi. We're not only going to rub your nose and your arrogant attitude towards bonuses, calling them crumbs, but we're going to make them tax-free for the people as well. Nancy referred to these bonuses as crumbs, of course. And he said, this is a Washington liberal attitude that they know how to run your life better than we do. And they're wrong, he said. And I want to play for you a video of some business owners, because as one hand of the government reduces taxes, another group of people, typically Democrats, will find some way to grab that money. Oh, look, the federal government reduce taxes. All right, let's grab them for Connecticut. And that's what's happening. And so there was a protest by business owners in Stamford, Connecticut. Let's run that video.
The president gave us a tax break and lowered the percentage. Now Governor Malloy wants to raise the percentage in the income tax. I want to know, for every elected official, to give me an answer on, when do we get a break? We've had enough. We're tired. We can't do it anymore. I've been in business over 30 years. This is the worst I've ever seen it. These policies don't work. Thank you very much.
That's right. As soon as you get a tax break from President Trump, the Democrat governor of Connecticut is going to come around and take it. And that was not a big group. There are never big groups at political protests. But that was a reasonably sized group, especially considering the fact that these are business owners They're aware of what's going on. They understand that this is a direct threat to their existence, and they have enough of a cash flow that they will put some money behind this. So that was a significant protest. So we'll see what happens with that. And again, I've covered so many political protests over the years, and to see people show up by the tens of thousands for President Trump, that's absolutely unprecedented. And then to just hear him talk for a couple of hours, just kind of a stream of consciousness. I mean, he didn't have big name cover bands to bring in young kids like Obama did when he got big crowds. And Trump's crowds are bigger. But anyway, that's significant. And that's the way the things are going to be done at the grassroots level, saying you're not going to steal the crumbs out of our mouth, which is really what the Democrats are trying to do. And then we've got Bill Gates. Bill Gates says that he wants to pay significantly higher taxes. And I would say, well, what's stopping you, Bill? Go ahead. Just make a big cash donation to the U.S. government. He's been lecturing President Trump saying you can't cut spending to these non-government organizations around the world. But, you know, the other thing is we don't necessarily have to wait for Bill Gates. I think we could make this happen. I think we could have Bill Gates pay significantly higher taxes along with penalties and interest, because he's been donating a lot of money to fraudulent charities, things like the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton Global Initiative. As Charles Ortel has pointed out on this program many times, those are unregistered charities. They're invalid. And not only, you know, should the people running that go to jail and pay massive fines, but the people who donated to those fraudulent charities, people like the Gates Foundation and Bill Gates himself, they ought to have to pay back that money plus penalties and interest. So, yeah, Bill Gates, you should pay significantly higher taxes and penalties and interest. But here's what he had to say on the video.
Do you think in that context the last tax bill made sense, where the benefits of the bill disproportionately went to people like you?
Your basic point is correct. It was not a progressive tax bill. It was a regressive tax bill. People who are wealthier tended to get dramatically more benefits than the middle class or those who are poor. And so
Bill is so worried about you.
Counter to the general trend you'd like to see, where the safety net is getting stronger and those at the top are paying higher taxes.
You'd be okay paying higher taxes?
No, I need to pay higher taxes. I've paid in absolute more taxes, over $10 billion, than anyone else. But, you know, the government should require the people in my position to pay significantly higher taxes.
They always say that, don't they? We always have these billionaires. We have Warren Buffett saying that, but, you know, they kind of snicker into their ice cream and say, I'll find a way out. I just want to pay higher taxes, but my accountants, they get a hold of me and they put these tax deductions in, and I didn't want them. I didn't want them at all. You know, yeah, you just paid for them. You lobbied for them. Look, I understand how phony Bill Gates is. A lot of us are old enough to remember in the early days of the computer industry how Bill Gates got his money. Stealing intellectual property. Bill Gates' whole empire is built on the foundation of intellectual property theft. He stole the operating system from Digital Research. He stole his first operating system verbatim. They wanted a cheap operating system for the IBM PC compatibles, and he stole it verbatim from these people who had created it. And they didn't have the kind of legal, they didn't have the depth in terms of legal services and money that Bill Gates and his wealthy family, supporters of Planned Parenthood and eugenics, had. That's how he got his money. Many of us remember that. And then he tried, then he did a great deal of intellectual theft even from Apple and got away. All right, let's talk about solutions to the violence that we have in our country. I've talked a great deal about the drug factor, about SSRIs, and of course, it's amazing to me to see so many people push back on the videos I post on Twitter. Of course, you can follow me at Libertarian. That's my handle on Twitter. But they'll push back and they'll say, you know, these things work out just fine for me and for my friends or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that from people who are alcoholics. I've heard that from people who are on cocaine. I've heard that from a lot of different people. And not everybody is going to have a problem with every pharmaceutical that comes out. The question is, do you want to put that bullet in the chamber of the revolver and rotate it and play Russian roulette? And how many bullets is Big Pharma putting in that chamber? In other words, what's your risk? Is it one bullet out of six? Is it two? Is it three? Maybe it's five. Maybe it's six. And but it's okay because the FDA says you can play with that gun. You can play with that gun. Or your conscience or your peer group says, that's okay. That won't happen. You can control this. You can handle the meth. You can handle the heroin. Don't worry about it. Or the school says that. You know, we got a behavior problem with Jimmy. He just won't sit still during class. Let's start him out on some ADD drugs, and then we can move on to something more powerful if we need to. You know, ADD, which has a mechanism that is similar to cocaine. And then maybe if that doesn't work, we can put him on something like SSRIs that amplify the serotonin level, like LSD does. Same kind of mechanism. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's not the same thing as LSD. No, it's not. It's not. And the ADD drugs are not the same as cocaine either, but there is a connection. So you might want to educate yourself about that. But let's talk about the gun issues right now. And let's talk about the students' issues, because we've got the mayor of Dallas parading around the media today, and of course, he isn't going to stop the NRA from having a convention in Dallas. This is the mayor pro tem of Dallas, and it's kind of interesting, these little mayor pro tems. We had the mayor pro tem of Austin. That was the one I was talking about a day or so ago when we were filming a gun control rally here in Austin, and it was the mayor pro tem. This is the vice mayor. These guys get really frustrated because, you know, it's not that big a deal to be a mayor. But if you're the vice mayor, that's like being the vice president. You know, the vice president, the joke is, yeah, he gets to go to all the funerals of states, heads of state who die. Well, what does the vice mayor get to do? Well, the vice mayor gets to make outrageous statements in the hope that the national media will pick it up and make a big deal out of him. That's what happens. And so this guy, who is the mayor pro tem of Dallas, his name is Carraway, is out there demanding that the NRA move their convention away from Dallas. Well, they're not going to do it. And he says, well, you know, 1963, JFK was assassinated here. It's like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. Gee, maybe you should explain that to some of the students that are so ignorant of history. And there was a fatal ambush of five Dallas police officers. Here's a news flash for Mayor Pro Tem Carraway. Those five police officers that were shot, that wasn't the NRA. That was Black Lives Matter people that you probably support, because this guy is a liberal black mayor that is there. So anyway, then we've got the teens who traveled up. I think it was about as a small group of teens from that school who traveled up to the White House, and they held a lion outside of the White House. And yeah, they are lying. They were lying down, but I think lie is the operative word here. What they did was they laid down for 3 minutes to symbolize how long it took for the shooter to wreak his havoc. And then there was another report that I heard somewhere. This is CNN reporting that. Another report that I heard said that they laid down for 15 minutes to show how long it took for him to buy his weapons. Well, maybe what they should have done is they should have laid down for the amount of time that it took the police to show up. And I'm not knocking the police. But the reality is that if you want to solve this problem, you better look at ways to solve the problem instead of focusing on an agenda that has been fed to these youthful idiots. They're also useful idiots, as Lenin called them. But now we have youthful idiots. They're the most useful of all idiots. And that's what they're doing. So yeah, 3 minutes is how long it took him to do that. How long does it take the police? Remember that Florida sheriff told us? He said, well, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes it takes us in typical response time to get to an emergency. So we're going to talk about the solution to this. And I think we need to have a quick way, a handle, that I think is a positive term. Maybe we could do something. We could call it Posse Academia. Posse Academia. That's great. Armed teachers. We'll talk about that more in a minute. But just to show you how bad things have become in our schools, this is a story from a few days ago. Student council in California. Where else? A student council in California banned the national anthem from high school assemblies because They don't like the third verse, which nobody sings. As a matter of fact, nobody can really sing the first verse of it. Most people don't know the words. And if they do know the words, it's such a difficult song to sing. You know, it was originally a drinking song back in the taverns, and then they put it words to it about a battle. And that's what they object to. It's led by the student body president, Ariana Kermanazada. Kermanazada. I don't know. Maybe she's not from America originally, or her family. And maybe like Nikki Haley, she is profoundly ignorant about our history and virtue signaling for attention. But anyway, this student body president, whose name I cannot pronounce, said it was brought to our attention. Oh, how did they find the third verse? It was brought to our attention that the national anthem's third verse is outdated and racially insensitive. Is it really? You know, if you look up Snopes, the people that have the cats and sit on the couch, you know, those guys, those authorities on everything, they said, well, it could be. It could be. It's really kind of undetermined as to whether or not it's racist. So let me read it to you. Here's the context. And where is that ban who so vauntingly swore that the havoc of war and battle's confusion, a home and a country should leave us no more? In other words, where's that group of people that were trying to take away our home? Oh. It says, their blood has washed out their foul footsteps' pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. So what are they talking about here? I have to translate this because, you know, we're talking about high school students who have less than a third grade vocabulary, if that. And clearly, this is not a third grade vocabulary. This is written at a time when people were educated because we didn't have the government involved in education. And so what they're talking about here, children, is they're talking about the War of 1812. They're talking about a battle where they had hirelings, that's mercenaries, and slaves, that's people who served the tyrants, who offered their lives to take away our freedoms. They said, for whatever reason. And when they talk about slave, understand that in that context, the British would press into freedom. People that were sailors on American ships, they would take over the ships, they would grab the American sailors, and then they would keep them under duress. That's slavery. That's slavery. But they look at this and they say, slave? You're talking about slave? That's obviously racist. No, you're obviously stupid and ignorant if you think that. They're talking about the fact that mercenaries and people who have been captured by tyrants are not going to take away our freedom. And if they do, we're going to not give them any refuge and we'll put them in the grave. We'll be right back.
In Texas, it's David Nutt.
Keep on dying. Welcome back. You know, we have high school students who are so profoundly ignorant that they can't read the lyrics and they don't know anything about history. They don't know when the third verse of the Star Spangled Banner talks about hirelings and slaves. They're talking about mercenaries and they're talking about people, in many cases, who were literal slaves. They called them press gangs. They would kidnap people off of out of ports. They would kidnap people from other ships. They would put them on their ship. And it was literal slavery. And so that's what they're talking about. They're saying these are people who had absolutely no reason to come to our country and fight us. They had no reason they had no dog in this fight. They're strictly mercenaries and slaves. Slaves, even to the extent if they voluntarily did this, they'd offered themselves into slavery. And yet, because they use the term slave, the student council in California wants to ban that. That's what we're up against. We're up against people who want to repeal the Second Amendment. Look at the headlines across the United States calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. The New American curates some of these. New York Times, an op-ed piece. To repeat, repeal the Second Amendment. Another one. Cass Sunstein, this is a guy who wants to nudge us, right? He's going to nudge us through Bloomberg. He says, nothing in the Constitution prevents sensible gun rules. See, that's the little nudge. He doesn't come out. Cass Sunstein's tactic of doing this is not a head-on confrontation. He's not saying, repeal it, take the guns. No, he nudges us in that direction. He said, well, you know, there's nothing in the Constitution that doesn't say that we can't have sensible gun rules. I was just talking to you about the difference between laws and rules, right? Rules are things that are created by bureaucracies that we don't elect and that are not accountable to us. And then when we violate that, that's a civil violation. When you have a civil violation, they can take stuff from you, like your guns, like your car, like your plane, like your boat, like your house, like your cash, like anything they want from you. I say, oh, it's not a criminal violation because this isn't a law that was passed by Congress. We'll just call it a rule. It was done by the bureaucracy that you didn't elect that doesn't answer to you. And we'll give you no due process. We'll just take your stuff. We won't even charge you with a crime. How's that? How's that? You like that? You like that kind of a nudge from Cass Sunstein? See, the reason that the Second Amendment says shall not infringe was that they knew that it would be people like Cass Sunstein who would advocate a gradual process of taking a God-granted right recognized by the Second Amendment, not given to us by the Second Amendment, but it is a God-given right that transcends Second Amendment, transcends the Constitution, transcends this government. You know, because quite frankly, our rights were what the founders fought for. And they said, we have rights that come from our Creator. And we create governments to protect those rights. And if the government takes those rights, then it's our right and our duty to alter or to abolish that government. And you're not going to take our guns by a gradual process of infringement, by gradually turning our fundamental rights given to us by God into privileges granted by government. But that's the way Cass Sunstein comes out. Nothing in the Constitution, he says, prevents sensible gun rules. No, except for that infringement bit. But then we got people, these got these kids, these activists, these youthful, useful idiots who don't know the difference of that. Then we have the Chicago Tribune saying America has outgrown the Second Amendment. Now, we're outgrowing the mainstream media is what we're outgrowing. Washington Post. And, of course, this is Max Boot, a Council on Foreign Relations neocon who never saw a foreign war he didn't want to get us involved in, who has consistently opposed President Trump, one of the core never-Trumpers who's been very vocal all the way through, writing for the Washington Post. Where else? And says, the Second Amendment is being turned into a suicide pact. Well, that's an appropriate phrase because suicide pact doesn't apply to the Second Amendment. Suicide pact applies to gun control measures. Gun control is a suicide pact that the Democrats want you to join in. Suicide and genocide pact is what it is. And I've talked about this. I've talked about how many tens of millions of people that Hitler, who had the first modern gun control act, tens of millions of people he killed inside his own country. Then the same thing with Stalin, same thing with Mao. Mao up to 78 million just there. I mean, well over 100 million between just those three dictators who did not allow individuals in their country to have guns. Because as Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. So you want a suicide pact? You want a genocide pact? Turn all your guns over to these people. And it's amazing because these liberals are out there saying, you know, Trump is Hitler. Trump is Stalin. Give him your guns. The mental illness of the left. Okay, so speaking of the mental illness of the left, let's play for you CNN. Now, they're talking to a former FBI agent. And we'll play you the beginning of this. And then we'll go to the amazing comment that this FBI agent makes about what the founders could and could not envision. But at the beginning of this, the CNN crew is questioning him about the lack of action on the part of the FBI. So let's play this and I'll comment as we go along.
Former special supervisory agent, if I'm a parent who lost a kid and I know that the tip went to the FBI that said this kid might shoot up a school, what happened and how do they explain that to those parents?
And Dave, the three of us, you and I and Allison, we're all down there in Florida, and the emotion, the pain, the grief, the sorrow, it was palpable. And on Friday afternoon, when the news came in that the FBI had received a tip and what we call an actionable lead, and had not been followed up on, it was a veritable gut punch to us. Those of us in law enforcement, on the job now and retired, we take these things, this is our worst nightmare, and we take these things so seriously. The call came in on January 5th on the public access line. Now, that's either an 800 number or an 888 number. It would come into a professional support.
Let's hold it right there. It's not a single report. There were at least two reports done to the FBI. and it was, they were apart. You know, there was the one issue that said, hey, this is a guy who says, I want to be a professional school shooter. And the guy who was a bail bondsman looked at that. And then there was another report about that as well. So he's talking about just one report. Isn't that interesting the way they can deflect criticism? And I want you to hear the other way that he deflects criticism before we get to the money quote from this guy, who is a former FBI agent. And again, he is on CNN. Where else? And here he is basically deflecting criticism. Oh, really? It was just on a public line. We couldn't really take that seriously. And we can take the other one seriously, but I'm not even going to talk about the other one. But let's go back to what he had to say.
In the first level of triage, they would have looked at it. Obviously, this had enough information in it that should have been given to an agent. An agent or agent supervisor would have screened it and then sent it to an office of origin. Because this was Broward County, it would have gone to the Miami office. Somewhere along the way, whether it was human failure, and the FBI is made up of 35,000 employees, they're fallible human beings, or whether it was systems failure, and systems are only as good as the humans that process them, the FBI has got to get to the bottom of this. I laud FBI Director Wray. He did the right thing getting out in front of this. It's painful. It's awful.
All right, let's stop it right now. I can't take any more of this bureaucratic doublespeak and cover up. Oh, FBI Director Christopher, he took responsibility for this and did a mea culpa, but, you know, we got a big system. We got a lot of people. You just, stuff goes to the cracks. Mistakes are made. But you need to turn over your guns to us, is what he's going to say next. You need to turn over your guns to us and we'll protect you. Really? Really? Yeah, just give them your guns. These people, every time they make their mistakes, not a problem. We'll do better next time. But you can't have anything to do with protecting yourself. You can't be allowed to protect yourself. You can't be allowed to protect children. You need to turn this over to us because we're the authorities. And we don't make mistakes, except when we do make mistakes like this. So Trump is evil. Trump is Hitler. Trump is Stalin. But give him your guns. The FBI makes mistakes all over the place, but don't worry. Give them your guns, and then they'll protect you. Or this story here. At least 20 students told the police, the local police, about Nicholas Cruz, that he had been threatening to kill them. The police did nothing. This is a story from Free Thought Project. They're saying there were at least 20 calls for services in the last few years, according to the Broward County Sheriff, except that other accounts put the number at nearly double that, 39, not 20, 39. The school certainly knew about him. Our school resource deputies knew about him. So the school knows about him. The school deputies know about him. The local law enforcement knows about him. The FBI knows about him. But that's okay. You need to have the government protect you. There's nothing that you can do. Nothing we're going to allow you to do as an individual to protect yourself or others. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Posse Academia, that's what we're going to be talking about in this segment. We need to take the high ground on this. We need to have a handle. So I'm suggesting Posse Academia. It might be something teachers could get their head around. I don't know. It sounds kind of pedantic, but we're going to talk about Posse Comitatus, but we're also going to talk about this FBI agent and his lies and deception that he sold on CNN, the former FBI agent. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you of the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, because that's what funds this program. We have several products that we reduced to 50% off. We've got CellForce, the real red pill, 50% off. Icarin, our newest product to help detoxify your body, 50% off. We've got InfoWars Life Daily Digestive Pack. That's a combo pack of carnivore and floor life. Carnivore to help your digestion, floor life to help your gut health with probiotics. That pack is 50% off. And we have all Super Blue products, 50% off. That's our toothpaste, our mouthwash. It has iodine. It doesn't have fluoride. It has iodine and it has nano silver to fight the bacteria that causes gum disease, that leads to tooth loss, that leads to heart disease. And it is a great tasting toothpaste. Let me tell you something. If you try this stuff, you're going to really like this. This is one of our most popular products, our Super Blue toothpaste and mouthwashes. You can find that at InfoWarsStore.com, along with other products we have there. We really do appreciate your support. All right, let's go back to this FBI agent. And I want to play the money quote for you from this guy. Let's go ahead and run that clip.
And say, we invented gunpowder in 700 AD. The first guns were mid-14th century invented. The 1791, the Second Amendment comes online. And here we are in 2018, and we're hanging on to this, and we're going, we just can't talk about this, because if we do that, we're somehow going to tick off the Founding Fathers. The Founding Fathers could not envision that a 18-year-old kid could go into a gun store. He can't buy beer, but he could buy a semi-automatic weapon, and it's a weapon of war. Dave, we spoke about this. It is a weapon of war.
Oh, but you can draft that kid, and you can go send him on your wars of conquest that are undeclared and unjustified, can't you? I can't tell you how much contempt I have for this former FBI agent, James Gagliano. Let me tell you about his lies here. Now, where do I start? Okay, he gives us a history. This is the same tactic that was done by, who is that guy that took over from David Petraeus? McChrystal. In Afghanistan. He came back and he said, well, let me tell you, you know, the rifle shoots a bullet at this velocity, this many feet per second, and blah, blah, blah. You know, you should never have this in the hands of mere mortals, citizens of the United States. Only those of us in uniform should have something like that. Yes, of course. And so this guy starts out with a history. Oh, well, they invented gunpowder in this year, and then they invented guns in the 14th century, and blah, blah, blah. And then the 1791, we had the Second Amendment. What happened before? What was a significant event that this FBI agent left out in that historical timeline? Maybe the American Revolution, which began when the British were coming after the state-of-the-art military weapons and cannons at Concord and Lexington. Just like later, we had the cannons at Mount Goliad. Come and take it. That's a cannon on the flag. Don't try to take our cannons, Santa Ana, or we'll use them against you. He conveniently left that out, didn't he? And then he says, here we are in 2018, and we can't talk about this because somehow we're going to tick off the Founding Fathers. No, somehow you're going to tick off the American public. That's what you need to worry about. You need to worry about the fact that there are many of us who understand that the same people who fought to keep the government from taking their state-of-the-art military weapons and cannons at Concord and Lexington also said that you're not going to infringe on our rights, and if you do, we will alter or abolish this government, and that's exactly what we're going to do if you try to do this. Exactly what we're going to do. And so we don't really care about ticking off the Founding Fathers. They're dead, of course, right? What a silly, absurd thing to say, that somehow we are indebted. We have to live the life that they put out. Let me tell you, the Founding Fathers created a government that said, don't trust the government. This guy has just been questioned in the first part of this interview on CNN by saying, well, you know, we made mistakes all up and down the line, but trust us. I'm going to lie to you about history, but trust me. I'm going to lie to you about everything, and I'm going to try to overthrow the election, but trust me. I don't trust anything, this guy. Anybody that says trust us like that implies that. Those are the last people you should trust. As Patrick Henry said, trust no man that approaches the precious jewel of liberty, but regard them with suspicion. And I would say this guy needs to be regarded not with suspicion, but with contempt. You haven't earned our trust. You have earned our contempt, Gagliano and CNN. And then the lie that somehow an 18-year-old is going to get this. Well, they can't buy beer. They can't buy but they can buy a semi-automatic weapon, and it's a weapon of war. But you can send those kids to fight wars for you, can't you? And he wasn't 18, he was 19. And they did envision 18-year-olds with guns going to war, with state-of-the-art guns, because that's exactly what they had. The militia was composed of the male population from 16 to 60. 16 to 60, Gagliano. Not 18. And you don't even get the facts right. Here's a guy that's, oh yeah, we had all this information and we should have acted on it. He still doesn't even know the age of the shooter that he's supposedly talking about here. This is how pathetic this is. The lies of CNN, the lies of the FBI or the FIB. Just call him the FIB. So we need to call him. All right, let's talk about another guy here who's trying to define the term assault weapon. It's so difficult for them to define assault weapon because the liberals are so profoundly ignorant. They don't know the difference between semi-automatic and automatic. So now they're going to define assault weapon. I guess it goes back to any gun that makes them afraid because, you know, that's the definition of assault. You got assault and battery. Assault is if you do something that makes somebody afraid because they feel threatened. And so I guess any weapon to the left is an assault weapon because it makes them feel afraid. But let's play this clip where they're trying to define an assault weapon with a 100-page bill here. It takes 100 pages to define that for a liberal. Let's go ahead.
Senator, are there any draft bills or anything out there right now that you think might get a second look at this point, something that's already been out there that sort of sits somewhere in the middle that you could actually get some movement?
Yes, and I'm a co-sponsor of all of them. One of them, for example, is Senator Feinstein's bill.
Oh,
there
boy.
Are a number of us that are sponsoring
this
it.
This is Bill Nelson, one of the senators from Florida. Democrat.
That you cannot legally purchase an assault weapon. And then it goes on for 100 pages to define what is an assault weapon and what is not an assault weapon.
Okay, all right, let's just leave it there. 100 pages, that's probably a list of every weapon that they know of. That's 100 pages to define an assault weapon. And of course, you know, let's talk about buying stuff. You know, CBS says it's easier to buy an assault rifle than it is to get anti-diarrhea medicines in bulk. Well, let's... here's my solution. Let's make it easier to get anti-diarrhea medicine, okay? Do we need to have a proof of need to get diarrhea medicine? You know, they have proof of need for guns, and that's what the Democrats are proposing. So maybe you have to have proof of need for diarrhea. But that's the ridiculous aspect of prohibition in our country, that you can't get diarrhea. They want to hold that up as the level. And again, taking everybody down to the lowest level, to the loss of freedom, taking away your freedom and your dignity. I would say that if I've got to get government permission to get anti-diarrhea, that is an insult to both my freedom and my dignity. I have to do I tell you what, those guys are the ones who are full of it. Okay, let's talk about what should happen. Because you know, the solution, one of the solutions, of course, is to stop pumping drugs into our kids, a very important part of the solution. Another part of the solution is to make sure that since the government at every level, at the school security, at the local law enforcement, at the FBI, they were all warned multiple times, as many as 40 times, local law enforcement was called about this guy. Nobody did anything in the government. So I'm not going to trust them to protect us. And I don't trust them to protect the kids. I trust teachers. I mean, if you're going to turn your kids over to the teachers, are the teachers that irresponsible that you can't trust them with a gun? I would trust the teachers more with guns than I would trust the teachers with drugs to put into my kids. And maybe you can't trust the teachers. I never trusted teachers around my kids. We homeschooled our kids because my wife was a teacher and we had both gone to school. And it's like, I'm not putting my kid in that institution. It's got a lot worse than it was when I was in it. But still, if you're going to trust these teachers with your children, think about that. If you're going to do that, though, maybe what you could do is arm the teachers. And we could call it the Posse Academia. Because, you know, Posse Comitatus is the common law idea that came out of English common law where the sheriff would conscript any able-bodied man to assist him in keeping the peace or to pursue or arrest a felon. It was a very important thing. We're going to talk about that more on the other side of the break. What does that mean? What was the Posse Comitatus Act? Let's have the Posse Academia Act to go against the Gun-Free Zone Act of Joe Biden.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has said there are signals and signs before these shootings that, if recognized, could lead to intervention and could stop these events from occurring. And I would like to do something about it before we get to the standpoint that we have suicidal children. Because as we talked about last week, beginning of this week, SSRI drugs have been involved in not just mass shootings, and all the mass shootings except for two, but they have also been involved in many, many suicides, many of them not involving guns. Suicides that are attacks on people, acts of violence that don't have anything to do with guns. It could be knives. It could be cars. It could be drowning your children in the lake, as Andrea Yates did, because of a change in her medication. So we have to understand how dangerous those drugs are and not turn a blind eye to it, because the big pharmaceutical companies own the news media. And they do. I mean, just look at the commercials. I've said before, back in the 90s, my family moved out into an area where we couldn't get TV reception. And what a blessing that was in disguise. We didn't realize it. We were already really tired of television. But we got to an area where we couldn't get any TV reception. And after a couple of years, we stayed in hotels, and we would flip on the television station in the hotels and flip through just even the news channels. And it was one pharmaceutical commercial after the other. It's like, what in the world is going on? Because they used to be banned. In the same way that we used to have usury laws so that the big banks could not take advantage of people, we used to have prohibition against directly advertising drugs to people. And say, talk to your physician about this. Yeah, or your local drug dealer on the street. Hey, can I get some of that stuff? It looked really good, because I know that if I'm on that, I'm going to be like in slow motion running through a field with flowers and dogs and stuff like that, right? That's the lie that they sell you. You know, don't worry about all of those side effects that they rapidly go in, because it's been approved by the government, and the government is there for your safety, and they never miss anything. They don't make any mistakes. The pharmaceutical industry, it's even worse than what we saw with these law enforcement officers missing all the signs. Because the shooter, or these other shooters, were not paying the law enforcement officers to look the other way. It just fell through the cracks. Just like the military didn't put that guy that shot up the Sutherland Springs Church here in Texas. They didn't put him on the list, even though they had a lot of reasons to. The guy was mentally disturbed. He was violent. He'd been incarcerated. None of that was recorded in their database. So how are they going to check the background? Well, they all tell us, oh, we need more background checks. Well, background checks only work if the government does its job. And one of the excuses we heard from the FBI agent was, you know, we're really busy. You know, they got a president to change. they can't be bothered with every call that somebody calls. Hey, I got a guy here saying he's going to shoot up the school. I'll get back to you. Right now, I'm worrying about the Russians invading the election. And we'll talk about that coming up in the next hour. This is the insanity. So we had some places. You know, there are some enclaves of sanity in California. Believe it or not, the entire state is not crazy. It's just mainly the large cities. But the people outside the large cities really are pretty sane. And they point out last year, 5 largely rural California school districts adopted policies to allow teachers with concealed carry permits to bring their weapons on campus so that they could respond to any active shooting situation that might arise. You know, because the government doesn't always investigate. It doesn't always check the background. It doesn't always, when it knows that somebody is bad, it doesn't do anything about it. So maybe we ought to have some people there who can follow up and protect people in case the government doesn't do its job as usual. And so in response, the California legislature, dominated by Democrats, and Governor Jerry Brown signed a law to delete the authority of a school district superintendent or his equivalent school authority to provide written permission for a person to possess a firearm within a school zone. We'll be right back.
It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
The one gun law that might work is the very one that the Democrats will not allow. And proof of that is in California, as I was pointing out at the top of the hour. We had California school districts that were outside of the insane cities said, we're going to let concealed carry teachers bring their guns on campus. And immediately the Democrats in the legislature and Jerry Brown created a law to take away the authority of a school district superintendent or whatever to allow that. No, you can't protect yourself. Nope, we're going to take full responsibility. And then when they don't do it, oh, mistakes were made. We're just human. We got a lot of things to do here. You know, we can't really be bothered with all this stuff like we heard from the FBI agent. And then telling us, oh, we can't worry about what the founding fathers would think of us. Yeah. They knew exactly people like you There's nothing new under the sun. Human nature hasn't changed. And they knew people like this FBI agent. They were the ones that they had fought a war to get free of. And so you don't trust a government like that. You only trust a government that says, don't trust us. Don't trust us. That's what the founders gave us. I'm going to take some phone calls on this subject. Also, I'm going to cover a little bit about the Russia narrative. Amazing narrative. If you want to call in and join the show, let me give that number out to you. It's 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. So we got the NRA offering funding, training for teachers, help you protect your life, help you to protect your students' lives and so forth. And I said in the last hour, I said, I think we ought to call this the Posse Academia Law. And we could put it up against the Gun-Free School Act of 1990 that was put in by Joe Biden. Gun-free zone. Just think about that term, because this is the way the Democrats play with the language. A gun-free zone. This is a term of fantasy. There is no such thing as a gun-free zone. We have guns in the world. You cannot wish them away into the cornfield. All you can do is disarm people so they can't protect themselves against somebody that has a gun, because it's about equalization of power. And it's about making sure that if something happens, you've got a bad guy who comes into town and robs the bank, the sheriff would get together a posse. You know, he'd call Lucas McCain or he'd call Tom Donovan and go get Liberty Valance. That's the way it worked. That was really a great system. It was a system that had served the public very well, going back to the times of English common law. You would have a sheriff who was elected and responsible to the people, not an appointed police officer to enforce policy and to collect fines and fees and taxes. No, you had a sheriff that was there to keep the peace. He was a peace officer. He didn't have an army of people around him. And what he would do, and posse comitatus was the power or the force of the county. In other words, the people. It was the same concept that we have in the Second Amendment, in the militia, that we're going to have the mass of the population defend itself. So instead of having a professional police force or a politicized FBI that gets more involved in political intrigue and blackmail of political professionals so that they can build their bureaucratic empire, no, instead of that, the plan was at the local level, you would have sheriffs that were elected and they would call on the community who had the weapons and the ability to protect themselves. You would call on them if you had need of that. And then we had the Posse Comitatus Act. That was in 1878. And that was written in response to the fact that we had a thing that is also not taught in school, a thing called Reconstruction. Happened after the Civil War. That is the part of history that nobody wants to talk about in school. No one talks about Reconstruction. No, I'm going to talk about that. The government doesn't look too good during Reconstruction. And after it had gone on for a while in the South, even the people in the North said, you know, we don't want to make sure this never happens to us. So they passed the Posse Comitatus Act to limit the powers of the federal government to use the federal military personnel to enforce domestic policies within the United States. Ah, but now we're so much wiser in the 21st century. Now we pass the NDAA, and Obama signs it back in 2012. They stick into this annual funding bill for the military, National Defense Authorization Act. Every year they've got one, but every year they stick in some really bad stuff and say, you got to pass it because we got to fund the military. Military is first priority. We got to fund that. So no matter what we stick in here, no matter how dangerous it is, you got to fund it because it's about the military. And that always comes first, comes before your freedom, comes before your liberty, comes before the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And that in that, they presumed to give themselves the ability for the military to detain people indefinitely without trial, even to transport us to other jurisdictions where they can torture us. That's what they did. No, that's exactly the opposite of the Posse Comitatus. Because, see, the whole idea was that we would have a posse to assist the sheriff, and we would have a militia that would assist the permanent military corps of officers. We would only have a permanent navy and we would have some military officers who were on board those ships. We'd call them Marines. Other than that, we were not going to have a standing army, because that was always eventually used for purposes of empire, of conquest abroad, and then it became the tools of tyranny at home. They understood that. They understood history. They understood human nature. And so we should, I understand that posse and posse comitatus has been appropriated by some. It has a bad connotation for others, but we're going to reclaim that language. We're not going to let people steal that language, and we're not going to forget our history. And so when we have these fantasy terms like gun-free zones, oh, let's just live in a gun-free world, kumbaya, isn't going to happen. Let's have some real solutions to some real-world problems. Joe Biden put together the Gun-Free School Act of 1990. The Supreme Court originally found that it was unconstitutional. And so then you had Attorney General Janet Reno in charge of killing the children at Waco for their own good, of course, for their own good. And then covering it up, misdirecting people, saying, well, you know, we'd had reports that the people there were abusing some of the kids, so we just had to set them on fire to make sure that didn't happen anymore. So Janet Reno proposed some changes to the act that were upheld by lower courts and that didn't go back before the Supreme Court again. So now we have the Gun-Free School Act of 1990, and we've had school shootings going up ever since then. Because when you have a gun-free zone, what that means is that you have no ability to protect yourself. We should call it the defenseless zones, because that's really what they are. See, that's the way the Democrats use the language. Gun-free. Yeah, that sounds good. All right, we'll go with that. Instead of saying the Defenseless Schools Act of 1990. That's really what Joe Biden gave us, the Defenseless Schools Act. So let's take the principles of posse comitatus. Let's take the principles of the Posse Comitatus Act, and let's have this debate. Let's remember how we were originally supposed to protect our communities, how we were originally supposed to defend our country, not with a permanent standing army, not with a massive army of police officers who become increasingly militarized and under central control from the federal government. Let's bring this term back. Let's talk about a posse academia. That would be the great way to do it. And the NRA is there to help train people. They're offering to do that. That'd be a great idea. But meanwhile, what is President Trump doing? Let's hope that he's not going. There's a report from Politico. I don't know if this is true, because this is Politico. Headline, Trump surveys Mar-a-Lago members about gun control. What do you think the wealthy people at Mar-a-Lago are going to say about gun control? These are the people who live behind walls and have private security guards. Of course, they don't want you to have a gun. You could be dangerous to them. What are they going to say? This is not good if this is real. This is not the way to sample public opinion. Let's hope that this is not true. As I said, it is Politico after all. Let's hope that this is as inaccurate as most of their stuff is. But if President Trump wants to know about guns and gun laws, he should ask Donald Trump Jr. This guy's got his head on straight, especially about the Second Amendment. So I hope Trump doesn't ask his Mar-a-Lago members, but ask your sons. Please ask your sons. They will educate you if you need any help about this. It shouldn't be a question, but let's seize history. Let's seize the language. Posse academia. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to take your calls right now. We've got a couple of people on the line. I gave out the number earlier. Let me give out that number again in case you want to join the program. The number is 888-201-2244. That's 888-201-2244. And if you want to call locally here in Texas, the number is 512-646-4426. That's 512-646-4426. Let's go to our first caller, Blaine in Avon. You said you want to talk about gun control. Go ahead, Blaine. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I called last week, if you might remember. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They chose their words very, very carefully.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you look at well-regulated, how do you keep a well-regulated militia? Well, you inculcate into the culture guns from an early age. That's why our army kicks the crap out of everybody else, and why we're so good at doing it, because it is inculcated from an early age of how to do this instead of countries where you mandate military service, like Germany, mm-hmm. where they, you know, they are, you know, you mandate that at the age of 18, you go to the military service. Well, those people haven't been exposed to survival tactic. They haven't been exposed to how to operate a gun. Okay, that's the first point I want to make.
And let's interject here. You know, when we see well-regulated, the Democrats go, well, we'd like to regulate them. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about training and control, real gun control, being able to control your gun. That's what they're really talking about. And that's, again, one of the things that we're up against, because we're talking to people who have at best a third grade vocabulary when we're talking to the mass of the American public. That's why President Trump talks the way that he does. So that he can communicate to people, because we've got schools that deliberately dumb us down. But that's what well-regulated means. Go ahead.
And again, on well-regulated, somebody brought this up. I was watching the Alex Jones show the other day, and they were talking about the Dick Act of 1903. Mm-hmm. I did some reading on that. This was, you know, the whole debate about them saying, oh, we have a well-regulated militia. That's called the National Guard. No, there's something called organized militia and unorganized militia. Okay.
Yes.
This debate has already been laid to rest.
Mm-hmm. This is not. And 200 years earlier, we had, I guess it wasn't, that was the early 20th century. But anyway, 150 years earlier, they knew quite clearly that the militia was distinct from the professional army or the enlisted army or whatever. They knew that very well. If you go back and read any of the history, if you even go back and read Last of the Mohicans, you'll see that tension between the militia and the enlisted army that was there, very distinct, and people they knew what they were talking about. If we go back and we look at the militia, as I said before, it's not it wasn't a surprise to them that some 18-year-old would get a military weapon. They were handing them out and training them at 16, and saying, "This is the militia from 16 to 60." Go ahead.
You were required to have it in a lot of cases. Okay,
that's right. That's right. Now, what they used to do in England, they used to require the longbow. They would prohibit crossbows because, again, it was about a balance of power. They wanted to make sure that they had the balance of power. And, you know, a crossbow could go through armor for knights. So they wanted to make sure that they had a well-trained yeomanry. And so they would have these guys, and it was required practice every Sunday. You know, you could actually go back. When we went to England, you could actually dig up the skeletons of the guys who lived at that time. And their left arm, from holding the bow out under that pressure, the bones were more dense in their left arms from the intense practice that they would use for the longbows. But anyway, it's about the training, and it's about the militia. And that was a tradition that they were picking up on.
Okay, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. I want to get onto a different point, because this is important. I studied in Germany. Well, I studied in Austria, studied abroad program. And, of course, I was in a small group of Americans where I was the only conservative, and I was the only one that knew anything about anything, for the most part. And I've been to these concentration camps, okay? I studied genocide. I studied, mm-hmm. I looked at these. I've been to Birkenau. I've been to Auschwitz, okay? I've seen these places. This is what happens when you take away guns from people. And it is very eerie. It is very heart-wrenching. And if people don't want that kind of thing to happen here, we need to keep our firearms. And more so, this whole crap about taking out this third section in the national anthem.
I'm sorry, what?
They're wanting to alter our national anthem, yes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the third verse, yes, yes.
Yeah. if they do anything about maritime slave trade, I to all of the viewers, I recommend a book. It's called The Slave Ship by Marcus Rediker. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's a very, very good
book.
I had to do a term paper on it in my history class. They take different anecdotes. They take different journals and logs from captains, from slave ships that were found, from merchants, and they compiled it. And so it's basically a book about all that and talks about the voyages. Okay, oftentimes
you're talking about people being pressed into service into the British Navy, right? Or you're talking about people being transported.
They would go to bars or taverns. They would wait till the guys got drunk, and then they would have them sign waivers. You know, they would have them be drafted in. And they would, you know,
or just club them and drag them onto the ship.
Well, yeah. Okay. Now, for lack of a better term, who are the captains? Who are the merchants making money on? The slaves. They were not making money on their sailors. So 2 weeks out from port, they would find excuses and reasons to toss these sailors overboard and feed them to sharks. Hmm. They would find reasons to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
yeah, you violated rules, so we'll give you the death penalty, because that was pretty liberally applied back then.
They didn't want to pay them their wages.
That's right. That's right.
And most of the most of you who don't know, many of the Southerners did not own slaves. Actually, it was mostly the Northern Democrats who could afford the large industrial slave plantations.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know.
Yeah, if you go back to the documentary that Ken Burns did, he had an excellent historian in it, Shelby Foote. He was very good, wrote an excellent history of the Civil War. And he said that when the Northern soldiers would come in the South, they go, "Why are you fighting?" And he goes, "Because you're here." You know, in other words, why are you here? It's the same thing that they were talking about with 1812. You know, we're going to fight the mercenaries. We're going to fight the people who have invaded us. And that was the mentality of most of those people. They did not own slaves, as you point out. Very few people had the money to own slaves.
Right. Yeah. Or they were too proud to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, only 6% of the African slaves actually made it to where we currently call the United States. They weren't. Most of them went to the sugarcane fields. Most of them went to South America, you know, and Europe was the one that colonized all of Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got to go take a break, and I'll just wrap it up. And I would say one other thing, too. You're talking about most of them didn't make it to the United States. They went to sugar plantations and so forth in Bahamas and other places that remained under British control, because it was the British that were running the lucrative slave trade. And when they ended slavery, first it was a Christian who spent his entire life, William Wilberforce, spent his entire life to outlaw the slave trade. And then eventually they outlawed the owning of slaves. And it was Christians who did this. But with Britain, what they did was they compensated the people for their property, because it was something that they were taking. And they spent less to pay the slave plantation owners in the Bahamas to take their slaves and to give them freedom. They paid less than we spent on ammunition to kill people in our Civil War. Yeah, it wasn't really about slavery. It was about a lot of other factors. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. As I pointed out earlier in the program, we got CBS News saying, hey, it's easier to buy an assault rifle than it is to get anti-diarrhea medicine in bulk. And of course, that's a key part of it, in bulk. But still, why should I have their permission? It's like, you know, nowhere to run. but it's it's kind of the point where you can't take a, you can't go to the bathroom, let's put it that way. You can't take a bathroom break, let's put it politely, without the government's permission. And as our previous caller pointed out, you want to talk about genocide? Gun control is a suicide pact. Gun control is a genocide pact. And we've had, you know, that's what we need to get out. We need to get that information out. We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Margaret in Oklahoma. We got Lee in Nebraska, Perry in Texas, and others. But let's go first to Tristan in Canada. Tristan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good. How you doing?
So I live up in Canada, and people try to say that we have like stricter gun control. But honestly, if you want to go get a gun, it's no different than going and taking a one-day course and writing an easy test, and you have access. But I noticed that we have a lot less of these mass shootings. So I'm wondering what's going on behind the scenes, because it's not gun control that's doing these shootings.
Yeah.
Or the lack of it. So do you guys have like a deep state setting these up down there that's not happening north of the border?
I'm sure that's a part of it. And I think that I don't know what the situation is in other countries in terms of the massive abuse of drugs that are pushed by our schools. I don't know if there's a massive medication of people with ADD drugs and then moving on to anybody that they still feel is a little bit much of a discipline problem for them. You know, they can't spank kids anymore in school if they're a discipline problem. Instead, they give them a bunch of pills. That's the way we are here. Maybe that's that way in Canada. And I'm sure that there are mind control aspects of this. Look, we have seen that the beginning of the pharmaceutical meds, as we had our expert last week talking to us about that, the SSRIs go back to the CIA's research on mind control drugs and shooters with MK Ultra and so forth. Mind control has been on at the forefront of what the shadow government has been working on, what the CIA has been working on for a very long time. They have now, they probably have some pretty good stuff and pretty good control because they've moved on to these SSRI drugs, which have a lot of the same mechanisms as LSD in terms of the serotonin accumulation and increasing that, the same mechanisms. But they can call it something different. They can patent it, and they can have their surrogates make a lot of money off of it. They can buy a lot of commercials on mainstream media, and they can continue to push this on the American population. The chemical aspect of this is a great, a big part of it. But, of course, they have these projects that they've been working on for more direct control of your mind through electronics, through radio waves, and so forth. There's just so many different aspects that could be involved here. But what I've been trying to focus people's minds on is the fact that we've got a real problem. Whether our kids turn into mass shooters or not, we don't want them on this kind of chemical soup that is being pushed on them by the schools. And that's something that really needs to be addressed. Do you have that kind of situation in Canada?
Oh, 100%. So a funny story is we have a really bad issue with the Syrian refugees coming into Canada. Our faithful leader, Justin Trudeau, opened the floodgates and let them in the thousands. My daughter, unfortunately, is stuck in a school that got jam-packed with these kids. We've had one kid bullying from Syria, bullying these girls, fat-shaming girls that are 7 years old in class, and the school's not doing anything about it. They're probably pushing this kid on drugs, and then they're saying, what we can offer is your daughter coping mechanisms with bullying, and they will not remove these refugee problems from our school. And the school system is horribly broken up here.
And again, their coping mechanisms are probably going to be drugs for him, maybe drugs for your daughters, if they do that sort of thing. They're not going to have any discipline. They're not going to expel kids or lock up dangerous people. And that's what we see here in America as well.
Honestly, what 5-year-old boy doesn't have ADD outbreak?
That's right.
It's a boy. Put him outside and let him play and let him get it out. His parents are locking their kids in the house, bubble wrapping them, giving them an iPad. And, he has ADD. No. It's a kid. They need to be outside playing.
That's exactly right. And yet if you do that, you get reported to Child Protective Services because you're not watching your kids enough, right? Because they're outside playing. No kids are outside playing anymore. It's very different than the world that I grew up in. The world I grew up in was far more like the Little Rascals. I mean, we're out putting stuff together and building forts and, in the woods and so forth. I mean, that's the kind of thing we used to do. But now everybody, as you point out, they're bubble wrapped. And they're sitting there watching television or playing with their iPad. That's the sad part of this story. Yeah, thank you so much, Tristan. Let's go to Margaret in Oklahoma. Go ahead, Margaret.
Yes. One thing we can do to make things better is to stand up for, like, political prisoners. Like, Schaefer Cox was the leader of militia, and they railroaded him into prison. And we have a White House petition up for him. If people would go and sign that petition to free Schaefer Cox. And just standing up for people. There's a lot of political prisoners. People don't know. There's, like, really, really a lot of them. And if you stand up, if the government, like, plays whack-a-mole, if anybody who pops up and says anything they don't like, they just shuffle them off to prison.
There are so many out there. And of course, we talk a lot about the Bundys, and fortunately we had a whistleblower that blew that case open, but they were railroading those people. They kept them in jail for a couple of years. We got the Hammonds, who are also political prisoners, and Schaefer Cox. We've got Len Ulbricht was here last week. Ross Ulbricht, who ran Silk Road. When you do something that the government feels threatening, or that if you were allowed to do this, it would set up a pattern of behavior that they would find threatening, they will do anything to put you in jail. They will use any kind of pretext. They will add additional charges to that. They'll put you in jail without bail and that sort of thing. So it's very important for people to do that. So you've got a petition up for Schaefer Cox?
Yes. Yes, we have a petition on the White House petitions. It's sort of near the bottom. Just go there. People just go there and sign it. You can actually do something to help. Sign a petition. We should put petitions for all of the political prisoners. We should be bombarding them with petitions.
And this is why it's important. And this is why I had Ross Ulbricht's mother, Lynn, on, because we have to understand whether you agree with these people on the issues or not, whether you agreed with the Bundys or the farmers or the ranchers or the miners or whatever about their property rights that they had, which was not an issue where they were saying they owned the land. No, they had water rights, or they had grazing rights, or they had lumber rights, or they had timber rights, or they had mining rights. If you allow that property to be taken away, if you allow the government to run roughshod over this, then that's a very dangerous thing for your rights. So we all need to be aware of that and make sure that people get due process. Let's go to Mona next. Thank you for holding, Mona.
Hey, hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for me. Yes, go ahead.
I was calling to comment on the shooting, the Second Amendment rights question that you posted on Twitter. And I survived the Vegas shooting, and never in my life did I wish I had a gun on me more as when we were crouching in front of parked trucks at Hooters parking garage because we thought that the shooter came in the building. Mm-hmm. And that's where I had parked, and that's where we ran to because we had to run through the Tropicana Hotel parking lot. They had no entrance from the back of the Tropicana, so we had to jump over a barrier to get to the Hooters. And because they had an entrance, and as we ran through screaming that there was an active shooter, as we were approaching the valet parking, trying to get out of there, someone screamed, "He's in the building." So all hell broke loose. But I crouched in front of a parked truck in the parking garage. There was already three other people there parked, crouching in front of that when I was like the fourth truck in. And each truck already had like three or four people hiding in front of it. And we were just waiting to get picked off by the assailants. We didn't know at the time if it was terrorists. We thought they were people on the ground. And by the way,
we've got to go to break. Can you hold through the break? Because I want to ask you a couple of questions about that. And we've heard the same story from people who were sequestered in a bar. They said law enforcement came by and said, we've got active shooters on the ground, multiple places. And they all said, boy, wish we had a gun. But then there's another aspect of that, too. We'll be right back with somebody who survived the Vegas shooting. I'm David Knight, and we're taking phone calls here, and we were called by Mona, who was a survivor of the Las Vegas shooting, and she was just recounting to us how she was fleeing and desperately wanted to have access to a gun as they were hiding and being told that there were shooters on the ground. Mona, I had a question for you. Did you believe that there were multiple shooters at that event?
Oh, yes, and not only that, I thought like the faster and farther we were running, the closer they were getting. And that explains why there were people that ran all the way to the airport across the tarmac. I hear that, I've seen y'all's footage of the air traffic controllers declaring that there was shooters on the runway.
Yes.
And
the people in the Bellagio saying, hey, you know, we had this that was shot out and so forth. You know, many people were saying then they pushed them away and they tried to tamp that down. That is one of the most corrupt and obvious. It's not only the largest number of people shot, but it's also one of the most corrupt and obvious cover-ups and lying events that we've ever seen in any of these shooting events.
It really is. And what about that video at the Tropicana where all the people had the guns pulled out and they were like escorting the one guy out that night? Have you seen that one? Remember that one?
I haven't seen that one, but there's so many examples of it and the various stories that we've been told, none of which are plausible that have come out of that event. So we have people who are a lot of conservative commentators who will never call the government on their lies. We're looking at this and saying, wait a minute. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but this doesn't add up. What are they covering up? Why are they lying to us to this degree?
Well, am I speaking with David? Are you David Knight?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, because I'm really a big fan, too. Because I have five songs for Trump. In fact, I have one called Podesta's Playpen. They're rock songs. I'm the music contributor for Voices of Liberty, formerly powered by Ron Paul, before it became the Liberty Report, after it was Ron Paul Channel. But I have songs that you guys would like. I have one called Fake News America that I wrote after the shooting, and it smells like Soros is in the works right now.
Well, that's great. That's great. Let the producers know where they can get that stuff and let them talk to you. Stay on the line. I've got a lot of people that I've stacked up here, and this is my last segment. But thank you so much for calling us. I'm really glad that you were able to survive that. But what you were saying in terms of being so concerned about not having it, so many people have called and said that we didn't have a gun to protect ourselves. They're absolutely convinced. And there's a lot of evidence that there was more than one shooter at that event. But there is absolutely no question that the government has lied up one side and down the other about the Las Vegas shooting. All right, Lee in Nebraska has been holding for a long time. Thank you for holding, Lee. Go ahead.
Love to talk to you. I'll quickly answer your question, but I have several other points that I think are really critical that you guys need to look into. First, I agree with you. I think teachers should be armed, and that would be a way. And I'm old enough that I used to carry my shotgun in my car to school during pheasant season, and six of my buddies and I would go out hunting afterwards during pheasant season.
I remember that, too. And I talked about the fact that people who were in rifle clubs would take their rifles with them on the school buses to school. I mean, this is the world that we lived in. You could take a rifle with you on your hunting trip into the plane and stick it in the clothes closet there. I mean, we have had firearms so much more present in our society than they are now. That's not the problem. The Second Amendment is not the problem. There's something else that's there. And the fact that they push this agenda should make us all very concerned that the only thing that we can do is take the guns away. That's not the solution.
Agree with you, and we're short on time, but I have a couple three other critical things I need to say. You were talking about the Federal Reserve earlier. JFK had an executive order. It was 11110 that he did shortly before he was assassinated regarding the dissolving of the Federal Reserve. It never got enacted, but it's never been retracted either. And additionally, there is a couple other people online talking about Senator Schumer's daughter coming out and confessing that Senator Schumer impregnated her best friend, who was a 16-year-old teenage cheerleader, and took her to have an abortion and picked her up from the abortion, and it reportedly has been verified through Planned Parenthood that he did so. So,
wow, if that can be verified, that's going to be a big explosion there.
Absolutely.
Nothing would surprise me in this environment. I'm sorry, go ahead.
If I can get through everything, I have several product promotions. I also have a product that I need to speak to someone privately there about that you guys need to develop. I'm a retired physician, but I still read reports and surveys, and I've come across something from a reputable place that, if developed, I think would bring Alex more money than any of your other products combined. And I really, really need to talk to somebody about that. My wife.
Okay, well, I can let you talk to the producers and get you to hold online if you want.
That would be great. Yeah. I also, Roger may be interested in speaking with my wife sometime at 11 years old. She spent the summer at JFK's ranch, or not JFK, President Johnson's ranch, while her father was building a fence around the place, and was Lady Bird Johnson's friend and companion during the summer. She baked cookies for her. She played with her dog. They played dress up. My wife was given the same pearl necklace that she wore at JFK's funeral, and he may find it interesting to talk to her. There are many other things involved.
Yeah, he's done a lot of research on LBJ. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, talk to our producers. I'll leave you. Don't hang up, and they'll get some information from you. Thank you. Let's go to Perry in Texas. Go ahead, Perry. Thanks for holding. Hello, Perry, are you there? Hello, go ahead.
Hey, David, let me run this by you and see if it makes any sense to you or anybody else out there. Militias are illegal. The police state has replaced the free state as the privilege of citizens 21 years and older who are mentally sane or non-felons may keep but not bear the small arms the government deems acceptable. This may be changed by legislation when emotions run high. Now, how did we get there? Now, I know the Second Amendment doesn't say that. But
that's right. It's a process of gradual infringement, isn't it?
I read it over and over again, the Second Amendment, and it says people, and everybody wants to make it say citizen. Mm-hmm. You know, it has no age limit. It doesn't say anything about mentally sane. I thought, we used to, incarcerate people, that if they're walking freely and around society and you say they can't have a gun, well, they need to be in jail. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You're going to
exactly.
be freely, they're going to be prey. You're going to be prey
mm-hmm.
without being able to protect yourself.
Yes. Yeah. It truly is a suicide pact. We need to seize the language. We need to start talking about a suicide pact, that gun control is a suicide pact. Gun control is a genocide pact. And these are not gun-free zones. They are defenseless zones.
Well, they're a threat to me, my family, and my property if they want to take my weapon.
That's right.
How am I going to protect it? How am I going to protect what I have?
That's right.
Not
That's
just
right.
from government, but from some fool, from this guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, my daughter from the age of 5 has been around firearms. And when she was 16, she had her own .38. Now, that girl, she shoots way better than me. She has a way leveler head on her than me. And I would trust her to go to school with her weapon. I mean, mm-hmm. like you say, we used to be able to... we had gun racks in the back of our pickup trucks. Man, the whole
right.
parking lot was an arsenal.
I remember
when
that.
I was in high school.
Drivers were a lot more polite too. you didn't mess with a guy with a hunting rifle in the back of his pickup truck. You know, it was a fairly common sight when I was growing up, and we didn't have the kind of road rage issues here because the presence of firearms restrains evil, and it's a good thing for people to see that you're armed. It changes everything, but it's very important in the school situation. For them to not know who is carrying weapons. That makes everybody safer if you have that kind of uncertainty for somebody who wants to break in and start conducting an attack on the individuals.
When I was 9 years old, the rifleman, he was big on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wait to get my rifleman. Sears and Roebuck catalog, sent off, paid my money, $59. Came to my door, the mailman delivered it with a box of cartridges to me, 9 years
That's
old.
Right. That's right.
I didn't shoot nobody up with that gun.
That's right. You and I must be about the same age.
Cartridges in 30 minutes out in the back pasture.
That's right. You and I must be about the same age, Perry. Rifleman, one of my favorite programs. As a matter of fact, it was a favorite program of Nikita Khrushchev, interestingly enough. Maybe he liked the freedom that we have here in our country. That's it for today's program.